Hello and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Take the Next Step with ARM Accreditation. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Greg Arnault and Chris Shore from ARM. Today's schedule consists of about 50 minutes of material, leaving 10 minutes at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you. There's also a closing survey. This is another very important form of feedback, so we encourage you to please fill out that closing survey when it pops up on your screen. Our presenters today are Greg and Chris. Greg Arnault is the Director of Marketing, Partner Enablement Group at ARM. He has over 20 years of experience in marketing management with a variety of startup and Fortune 500 companies. Greg's career in semiconductors began in the 90s with Motorola in Scotland. He has held product management and worldwide business development roles at Hewlett-Packard before leaving to found a wireless startup developing social proximity applications for Facebook. Then his career took him to Green Power Monitor, a solar power monitoring company, where he ran U.S. operations before joining ARM in April. Chris Shore is a training manager for ARM. He has worked at ARM for 15 years, and for the last 14, he's been responsible for ARM's customer training activity. He's delivered up to 200 training courses every year to ARM's customers. He is involved in the development and launch of the ARM Accredited Engineer Program and also responsible for Active Assist Services. Chris is a regular speaker at conferences and industry events and has addressed audiences on ARM technology around the globe. He holds a MA in computer science from Cambridge University, is a chartered engineer, and a member of the Institute of Engineering and Technology. Greg will be kicking off today. Greg, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Kurt. Thank you. All righty. Well, as it says pretty much here on this slide, this is Take the Next Step with ARM Accreditation. We're going to be looking principally at what the ARM Accredited Engineer Program is. And before we do that, we might take a little bit of a kind of sidestep and take a look at what ARM is, what ARM the company and the technology is. Then we're going to look at the benefits of attaining ARM accreditation, basically what's in it for you, what's in it for me, why would anyone care about this accreditation. We're going to take quite a detailed look at how to find study and training resources, how to actually prepare for the exam, and some of the prerequisites before you go into that. So I'm going to click this button, see what happens. Here we are. Should hopefully go to the next one and on to the next after that. Okay, so a little bit about ARM. ARM, in fact, it doesn't stand for anything now. The processor, one of the initial processors that ARM worked on, was originally dubbed the Acorn Risk Machine. And the company was originally called Advanced Risk Machines, but after it floated on the London Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ in 1998, the company changed its name officially to ARM, ceasing to be an acronym, always written in uppercase. ARM is a UK company, it's a British company, and it keeps its headquarters in Cambridge, East Anglia, UK, one of the flattest parts of the country, but beautiful nevertheless. We do business on every continent except Antarctica. We have offices in 14 countries, and we continue to maintain our headquarters here in Cambridge. We've got major engineering facilities in the UK, the US, France, Norway, India, and China. Okay, well, taking a step onto this next one here, the architecture for the digital world, the chances are that you're never more than a few feet away from an ARM chip. They're not only found in mobile phones and tablet PCs and MP3 players, but also in the likes of hard drives, digital cameras, home broadband hubs, anti-lock brakes, smart cards, and embedded microcontrollers across a whole range of industries. ARM is one of these companies that to a great extent has powered the mobile computing revolution, with its chips popping up inside more than 95% of mobile phones. including a great many of the world's favorite smart devices. But we don't actually make the tablets or the smartphones or even the processors that go inside them. ARM designs the cores of the cores of the processors that sit inside these devices, what we often call IP, intellectual property. And it's a curious thing about this industry. What we technically sell is the right to use the IP. It's technically not the IP, although obviously we have to deliver it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to build the chip. So we work on the labyrinth of logic gates that shunt around the digital bits that make a processor happen that then gets designed into other products. It's one of these funny things about ARM. We have an importance and an influence in the industry way beyond our recognition. On the one hand, few people outside the semiconductor industry have even heard of ARM. But on the other hand, ARM technology now reaches around 75% of people in the world, with chips based on our technology driving billions of products every day. To date, more than 50 billion ARM-based chips have been shipped, and our partners are shipping around about 2.5 billion a quarter. And as a blogger who we're going to quote later on in the presentation called James says, most people don't realize the impact that ARM has had on them. And in 24th of February this year, Business Week said that ARM has had a more profound effect on the modern world than any other company. And a funny thing about our products, we don't actually know everything that our partner do with our products. At the last count, we sold over about 1,000 licenses to a huge and diverse group of partner companies. They've been deployed in products in almost every target market, from smartphones to medical instruments, tablets to electronic toys, fridges to hard disk drives. It would be a massive task to list or to even count all of the devices that have been built around ARM technology. And on the other hand, for a semiconductor company, we're actually quite small. Because, you know, traditionally these semiconductor manufacturers are enormous concerns with a huge amount of capital and assets behind them, with large numbers of employees and huge fixed assets, mostly in the form of wafer fabs, foundries. ARM, on the other hand, with its focus on designing and licensing IP, is very small in comparison. By maintaining our sharp focus on innovation and IP development, we're able to stay lean and nimble. So ARM basically designs the semiconductor intellectual property and the enabling technology at the heart of the world's most advanced digital products. Okay, I think all right. That's enough of that. Let's go on to this next one here. Enabling innovation everywhere. The business model that we have allows our partners to drive innovation throughout the electronics industry, not only in driving mobile devices, but also in areas where there's more and more intelligence, in digital cameras and smart TVs, or in home automation, smart energy, and home networking. And of course, now there are wearables, where companies big and small have the opportunity to develop an incredible array of products, not just watches, but jewelry and clothing and fitness devices or health monitoring. We're also seeing the shifting workloads in the data center demanding a more efficient, energy-efficient solution that offers the opportunity to get to a total lower cost of ownership. And our partners have stepped up to deliver the transformation of the network infrastructure and the servers we've all become dependent on. And when it comes to the enabling the creation of entirely new markets, ARM's scalable and energy-efficient processing power has been the trigger for multiple new markets like smartphones, tablets, e-readers, wearable, and IoT. And one of the things that we do is we allow our partners to be unconstrained by form factors and the size of devices. Our partners now have the ability to deliver 32-bit computing in any size factor down to 1 square millimeter, which is tiny. So that frees designers and developers and engineers to pursue their design goals without being constrained by the footprint needs or the excessive energy consumption of other CPU architectures. We've also, by focusing on developing scalable world-class processors and an industry standard, this frees our partners and their customers to focus their R&D efforts on incremental value add across any industry. Okay, on the mobile side, you know, since 1997, mobile devices have evolved from a simple device for making calls to a powerful all-purpose handheld computer. When I think about it, you know, when was the last time I actually set a bedside alarm clock to wake me up? you know, I want to wake up at a different time of the weekend than I do through the week, and so I ask my phone to do that. There are so many things where the phone has taken over functions that we would have expected the other devices to do in the past. But on this roadmap here, ARM has been with digital telephony pretty much since we switched over from analog to digital systems and has gone forward ever since. And in many developed countries, the penetration rate of smartphones and mobile computers is already very high, and replacement rates are about 2 to 4 years. So in many fast-growing and emerging economies, the incidence of smartphones is much slower and growing more rapidly. 2013 was the first year that smartphones actually outsold feature phones, previously called sometimes dumb phones, and there are now over 2 billion people using smart mobile devices. Many of the next billion people to connect to the internet are going to live in Asia. Already, entry-level smartphones, which includes all smartphones costing less than 150 without a subsidy, 150 US, have reached price points as low as $35, and tablets can be purchased for less than 50. Over the next 5 years, it's estimated that entry-level smartphones will grow at about 20% compound annual growth, with over 1 billion forecast to be sold in 2018. Lower-cost handsets require lower-cost components, so ARM has developed very small processors that balance the need for capability with cost. Mid-range smartphones are forecast to grow rapidly, although not as rapidly as the lower end, with a cumulative total of 2 billion devices sold over the next 5 years. A mid-range smartphone needs to have the same functionality as the most advanced devices launched a couple of years previously. Premium mobile devices are still forecast to grow at about 5% compound annual growth and will make up about 20% of the market in 2018. To meet the needs of such a diverse market, ARM has developed a family of processors and graphics technology that provides different levels of capability and performance while minimizing size, which reduces the chip cost and improves the battery life. ARM's Cortex-A family of processors is used in almost every smartphone and tablet computer. This includes the tiny Cortex-A5, which is used in some Android phones and provides sufficient computing for entry-level smartphones, costing as little as $35. In premium mobile computers, you might find a high-performance Cortex-A15 processor, which provides an amazingly full computing experience in products such as the Samsung Galaxy Note 3 or the HP Chromebook. In 2013, we saw the first mobile computing devices based on ARM's next-generation V8 architecture. This introduces even higher performance and greater power efficiency, as well as adding faster multimedia and improved security. We also saw the first consumer-based products based on ARM's new Big Little technology. Funny kind of name that, but it's basically the pairing of a high-performance mega chip with a much more humble, power-efficient chip. In a Big Little system, we've combined a big high-performance processor with our most power-efficient little processor. By ensuring that each task or application is run on the right processor, devices can deliver both improved performance and even lower power. In time, we think that many smartphones and mobile computings will adopt Big Little technology and ARM V8-based processors, where our Mali graphics and physical IP is also being used in many mobile devices. Semiconductor companies in China already use Mali graphics processors in around about 75% of their chips for mobile devices. Beyond China, both MediaTek and Samsung announced that they were using Mali graphics in their chips for high-end mobile apps. As with ARM's processor, Mali offers a range of scalable solutions that are being used in $35 smartphones, all the way up to $500 plus smartphones and tablets. Many of the companies that license a Cortex-A processor also use our physical IP technology to help create the most efficient implementation and so get the most out of their processor investment. Now, the interesting thing about the way that things are going with the Internet of Things, more and more devices can be connected and controlled via smartphone. A fitness application such as the Fitbit or Pebble smartwatch can connect to the Internet via smartphone. We can use our tablets to control the thermostats in rooms throughout our home, even when we're traveling home. New businesses and business models are being created to offer us information whenever we need it. Streetline directs car drivers to the locations of available parking spaces across the city. Farmers and fishermen can get local information to get the best price for their produce, which is especially useful in rural or developing regions. smartphones and tablets are helping us effortlessly to connect and control the digital world around us. The opportunities are huge, especially when mobile technology is combined with smart sensors embedded into the fabric of the world around us, creating an Internet of Things. The growth of smart devices and the desire for users to access any information anywhere at any time is increasing the amount, as is the richness of content that's transmitted, processed, and stored. Over the next 5 years, we estimated a 12-fold increase in mobile data traffic. Now, ideally, we want to increase capability within the enterprise without increasing energy use. This is one of the things about data centers. As they get bigger, they consume more and more energy. When combined with the emergence of other intelligent devices, wearable computers and machine-to-machine communications becoming connected to the network, we expect that the total amount of data transferred and stored is going to continue to grow. An increase in data requires more networking capacity and more capable networking functionality across carriers, operators, and enterprises. More data also requires more servers and data centers, especially cloud-based providers for storage and social networking sites. If the technology used in current infrastructure were to remain exactly the same, then an increase in capacity would require a similar increase in energy consumption. The electricity bill for carriers is already amongst their biggest costs. So these companies are therefore not just looking for more performance, but also improved energy efficiency. ARM's Cortex A9 was our first processor to offer the performance and sustained throughput to be suitable in networking equipment or servers. Platforms based on Cortex A9 started shipping in 2012, and the momentum has continued with Cortex A15-based devices that started shipping in 2013, which just goes to show the performance, functionality, and system reliability required for these markets. The arrival of chips based on the ARM V8 architecture broadens the use of ARM technology into even more enterprise applications. Over the last few years, many of the major chips providers for enterprise networking and carrier equipment have announced ARM-based chips for this market, including Altera, Broadcom, Cavium, Freescale, IBM, HiSilicon, and a whole host of others, which we won't go on to because we'll go on to the next slide here, which talks a little bit about ARM-based servers. Okay, ARM-based chips for the server market we also have in development. ARM and its partners are initially focusing on companies with hyperscale deployments where the server is a critical business asset. For companies providing cloud infrastructure as a service and web services, the server can be both a revenue driver and a major source of costs. For many social networking sites, the server is just a cost. They make their revenues through advertising or other means. For both types of companies, reducing the cost of owning a server is key to improving their profitability. As some of the servers within these companies have become dedicated to smaller sets of workloads, it's enabled opportunity for semiconductor companies to develop workload-specific chips. By identifying a specific server workload, it's possible to integrate many of the companion chips into a single chip, creating a system-on-chip design. Replacing data transfer between different chips to transfers within an integrated chip and adding designed for purpose hardware functions dramatically reduces power consumption and equipment footprint. In some applications, more than 90% of the energy can be saved. For the companies ARM is targeting, this approach delivers saving in terms of acquisition and running costs. Okay. Just a little bit about the Internet of Things. You know, many of the products and services we use every day are enabled by a small, smart microcontroller or smart card. For example, the control panel, an electric motor in a washing machine or lift controller, or the remote control for a TV, or the chip in a passport or credit card. I might just skip over this kind of a little bit quicker. In around about 2013, approximately 19 billion smart controllers, microcontrollers, were sold globally. As these chips are used in a wide range of end markets, there are general-purpose controllers developed to be usable in all sorts of devices. They can be very low cost, and in 2013, the average selling price of a microcontroller was about $1. In 2013, there were 3 billion ARM-based microcontrollers and smart embedded chips sold. Over the past 5 years, much of the growth in the embedded market can be attributed to ARM-based chips. Okay, alrighty. What is the ARM accredited engineer program all about? Okay, this it's kind of a little bit difficult, different doing this without transitions, but here we go. This program, kind of from an individual point of view, if we were to say go off to the Bible and say, you know, one of these points of reference that very many people trust because it's kind of independent. If we ask Wikipedia, you know, what is ARM? What is the Cortex-A processor? It'll tell you on one of its pages that ARM is the leading 32-bit architecture in mobile. Actually, we're leading in many other fields also. If you look at consumer for the home, it's about 80%. If you look at solid-state drives or hard disks, it's about 90%. ARM is a leader in very many different segments. But ARM is clearly the leading 32-bit architecture for in the mobile space. And you may be skilled in ARM. In fact, you may be very skilled. But it could be that the people that best know that are your colleagues and peers at your work. Possibly your boss knows. But if you go outside the company, how do you prove it? And one of the aims of this certification is to have an industry standard, a universally recognized qualification that says, I know ARM. I'm skilled in ARM. I know what I'm talking about when it comes to ARM. And this is one of the reasons that we created this program. So the ARM Accredited Engineer Program is the only global exam-based accreditation program that exists today for ARM technology. It gives engineers and developers all over the world credible evidence of their command and knowledge of ARM technology. It shows that you're serious about developing your career. It also gives employers a consistent benchmark that can be used around the world to assist in recruitment and staff development programs. We launched the program, among other things, to encourage the continuing supply of well-trained and well-qualified engineers for the growing ARM ecosystem. Our aim was, at the same time, to encourage the emergence of an extensive third-party training ecosystem, all working to the same global standard. If we look at some of the nuts and bolts of this, it's not rocket science. We have multiple exams. Two of them have been developed and are published and are public at the moment. As you can imagine, we have an entire roadmap of future product exams that we're working on that we will be launching going forward into 2015 and beyond. The program is administered very professionally through our examination partner, Prometric, which has around about 6,000 test centers in 168 countries across the world. It's a computer-based test, a little bit like if you go to do your theory test for driving, you have to turn up at a testing center. That's the approach that we've taken with this exam. We make sure that the candidate is the candidate by physically seeing them, checking their identification to make sure that the validity of the certification is assured. And the type of test that you do, it's multiple choice. This makes it, as you can imagine, a lot easier when we start to roll it out to different countries and localize it into different languages. The testing and the marking of it is more straightforward with multiple choice than it would be if we had open and ended questions. It's an industry-wide standard. It's supported by us and it's supported by Prometric. And we have... at the same time, from the very beginning of the origins of this program, we began to construct a third-party ecosystem of training partners that can also provide training beyond going to ARM or basically researching the information yourself in terms of getting up to speed for the exam. Looking at the exam development, we took quite a step back here in terms of saying from the beginning, you know, who do we want to target here? What is an accredited engineer? What's the job spec? What's this person going to be like? So we spent a bit of time at the beginning soul searching what would be our ideal candidate. And when we came up with that, we said, well, what is the problem that we want to solve with this exam? So we came up with different sectors, different segments of knowledge that we should assess, that we should test with this exam. We then spent you wouldn't believe it, several months of work in coming up with hundreds of questions, out of which we took only the best to form the accredited engineer exams. And we have various forms over these exams so that if you have to resit, you don't end up sitting the same test again. And once we'd done that, we were able to actually come up with the ARM accredited engineer exams, the AEE and the AEME. The items are grouped into three different level tests. There are 70 questions in each exam. Initially, when we launched this, we were asking people to do it in 60 minutes, but in some parts of the world, 60 minutes was a bit aggressive, so we relaxed that a little bit out to 90 minutes. And we took a lot of time, and we had a lot of professional consultancy help from Prometric in doing this. We put a lot of effort into level setting for the different exams and for the different forms of the exams so that we could be more or less assured that they were of the same level. Then having launched them, we were quite gladdened to see that we'd more or less got it right, but after a few months of running the program and getting real empirical data coming in, we were then able to go back and fine-tune the level of the exams so as to get the two exams more or less the same level of difficulty and more or less the same level of difficulty across all of the forms. There are essentially two exams. One of them is the AEE and one of them is the AEME. Now, AEE, but both of these exams at the moment are focusing on 32-bit technology. AEE is the one which is going more toward Cortex-A and Cortex-R, whereas the Cortex-M is possibly more relevant in parts of the world like Europe. It's our MCU exam. It focuses more on the Cortex-M technology across both V7 and V6. Some of these URLs, they repeat a little bit through the presentation because we reckon by repetition, more folks are going to remember them. They are pretty important. The central stepping off point for finding all information about this program is arm.com/AEE, which will also take you through to the Prometric site. Looking a little bit about what constitutes the makeup of both of these exams, you'll see that there are six different categories here. We wanted to come up with an exam that was, in its initial manifestations, not entirely, not purely, say, software optimization or not purely hardware design. The intent with these two exams is a little bit general, testing knowledge in different segments, and this can, in the exam analysis service, for example, which some companies avail themselves of, this can allow employers to see where their candidates are good in various different sectors of their knowledge about ARM. So the distribution of categories is pretty similar between the two exams. Later on, when we look at the syllabus, in the syllabus part, you can even dive down and see what the subtopics are beyond software development and architecture and optimization. But the principal target for an exam like this is the sweet spot is an embedded software engineer, which leads on to the next slide here. Our principal target is embedded software engineers. It's kind of the interface between hardware and software. We find that the certification is relevant, and it's also extremely valuable to FEs, to field application engineers. It can serve as a certificate of expertise, of competence, that these engineers are trained and they know what they're talking about in the world of ARM. It's good for technical support staff. It can be a good gauge as to whether or not particular staff are ready to give technical support online, on the phone, or in person by getting through these exams. And it has some relevance toward consultants and students. We didn't initially launch these exams with the idea of students and undergraduates in mind, but this is clearly something that we are thinking about on a roadmap, is having products that would be a little bit more suitable for the academic market. And in summary, you know, the exam is good for all industry professionals who are going to benefit from demonstrating their knowledge of ARM architectures. Okay. All right. From an individual point of view, I would pull out this pull out the point here that we're kind of, if I'm looking for a new job, then to the outside world, a very good way to be able to prove that I know what I'm talking about is in the world of ARM is to say that I'm ARM certified. So it's a differentiator. It's a useful way that I can set myself. I can differentiate myself from my peers to say that I'm qualified in the world of ARM. I can also use the syllabus as a useful guide for self-study and skills development to help me on the path of improving my knowledge with respect to ARM. From an employer point of view, and I'll kind of break this into two different graphics. There are benefits here from the employer in terms of getting engineers that come in that perhaps someone else has accredited, but then that might not be a motivation for me to accredit my own people. And then on the following picture, might look at the benefits for the reasons why I might want to get my own people certified. But certainly, at the moment of recruiting people, it's a very useful filter to be able to, instead of the company having to go off and come up with 20 questions or 30 or 40 questions assessing a candidate's ability in the world of MCU design or ARM architecture, I can use this exam as a pre-filter to actually find out who's a good candidate to bring into the candidate pool to begin with. So it can be a very useful selection mechanism at the start of a recruitment process to find out whether someone is a good candidate to put into the candidate pool for further interviews. And on here, I think the benefit of accreditation for an employer as to why I would actually want to get my own people accredited and put resource in terms of hours of study and put the resource available in the hands of the candidate is principally for me that the biggest thing here is this badge of competence to the outside world. It's a very useful indicator to the rest of the industry that this particular company is expert in the world of ARM, that it has proved to an independent standard that it can actually it can field engineers who are competent in answering technical questions and giving technical support and who can design an ARM. And this this for me would be why I would go off and get my own people assessed. Okay, a little bit of fun here. It's going to be interesting to see how this this works with sort of manually put in some transitions. This is a true story about a blogger called James Langbridge who wrote about it. He went for a job interview in France. And he was kind of surprised to find out that the ARM certification was more important than he would have expected. So he went in there. I guess this was all conducted in French, but it's translated through for us. And he had the typical kind of introduction at the beginning of the interview. You know, good morning, James. Tell me a bit about yourself. And he answered, well, you know, but of course, I'm from the UK. I live here in France. I like digital photography. And here is a list of previous clients with recommendations. Okay, are you an ARM-accredited engineer, answered the interviewer. And he said, well, no, I'm not. You know, up until now, I didn't really think it was important. But look, I did write a book. I'm actually an author of an important book on ARM processors. To which the interviewer said, but that doesn't mean you're an ARM-accredited engineer, does it? To which James said, well, I know indeed, but forgive my insistence. I wrote a book on ARM processors. I had the honor of having one of ARM's well-known trainers reread the book and correct a few mistakes, and it's actually listed on ARM's website. Yes, but still, that doesn't guarantee that you know ARM processors and MCUs. at which point I think my jaw dropped at that point. And this is one of these things that we're starting to see in the industry, is that employers are looking for the ARM accreditation as part of the recruitment process. It's one of these things that's starting to become ever more important in the industry, is the need to actually prove not only that you have some kind of a history in ARM and competence, but that you actually have the certification to prove it. At the TechCon recently, which was an ARM event open to the public in San Jose, amongst one of the questioners, even someone who had 10 years of experience on their resume, that particular person still wanted to have the certification as a kind of a rounding off on their resume to show that they were accredited. I'll just say a little bit about the corporate partner program. For companies who want to be able to not only accredit their own engineers, but actually train their people internally, we have the most sophisticated of our schemes within ARM, which is called the ARM Accreditation Corporate Partner Program, which allows companies to take the material, our training material, and train their own people on. Alrighty, and just as a quick kind of example of one of these companies that is a corporate partner, there is a company called Future Electronics, which is one of the first companies to be a corporate partner, and they have found that in their case, it's been a tremendous bonus for them to be able to use this accreditation program to demonstrate to the outside world when they come in to design a product or design a board, a system around ARM, that their engineers are accredited. It has helped. They have seen that it has helped business. In the first phase of their program, they had 45 engineers being trained up as ARM accredited educators, and the company is now planning to extend the scheme, providing extra training to half of these educators to help them, to equip them to take the accredited engineer exam. And at the end of this, the intention is to be able to actually get their technical workforce across the world involved in ARM design accredited as a useful adjunct to the business, to demonstrate to the outside world that they can be trusted, advisor in the world of ARM. And if I can quote their vice president of vertical markets at Future Electronics, he said, you know, we've got to be more than an organization that's offering spec sheets and devices. We have to be the trusted advisor based on our level of expertise. From the ARM training perspective, it ensures that the clients get more than just internal training, as this is an external qualification process. Yes, and as ARM-accredited MCU engineers, our FEEs are better qualified than any others in the distribution channel to provide this type of advice. At this stage here, I'm going to hand over to Chris.
Thank you, Greg. That was a fascinating introduction to ARM and to the program. So what I want to go through is the business of studying for the exam. I don't have much time to go through this because I really want to make sure we get time to answer some questions. So I understand you can download and print the slides off, and I encourage you to go ahead and do that and use my slides as a reference. One thing is we all start in the same place. We all have different routes to kind of filling in the gaps, if you like, in the knowledge. And that place is going to be the syllabus. I'm having trouble advancing the slides here, Kurt, so if you could just advance to slide 35, that would be very handy. You can download the syllabus from the website. Two exams. Next slide, please. Two documents. Sounds simple, but please do make sure you get the right one. The latest versions are always guaranteed to be available on the ARM website, so always check there rather than getting them from a third party to make sure you're working from the right document. And if you open that up, and if we can move to slide 36, you can see the contents page. I won't say ignore the introduction, but you can be certain that there will be no questions on that. If you head to slide 37, you can see the interesting bit starts in section 2. That explains the structure and the content of the syllabus, and it's worth reading that quite carefully. And moving on to slide 38, in particular, I'd like you to pay attention to this bit. This is section 2.1 on difficulty levels. Hopefully we should be on slide 38 now. Thank you. Through the syllabus, what we've tried to do is classify individual subjects using a very simple traffic light scheme. And you can see green, amber, and red. Now, an item that's coded green is one that you should pay particular attention to. If you go to the next slide, please. That's required knowledge, and it's almost certain to get questions on that in the exam. An item that's coded amber, that's an item that you should be aware of, but questions will be at a relatively high level. And if you can skip to slide 41, an item coded red, that is not required knowledge for that particular exam. You might ask why we've included it, and the answer is we plan a set of further exams which might include more difficult subjects. So by all means, read about those and then breathe a sigh of relief that you don't have to look at them. The next slide, slide 42, if you can skip on to that, that shows an example extract from the syllabus, and you can see how we've used this traffic light coding scheme. This is the instruction set subsection of the architecture section of the syllabus, and it's divided into a number of areas, and all the syllabuses are like this, load and store exclusive, and then barriers, and then floating point, and then neon, and so on. And if you look at the first three, you can see the traffic light classifications down the left-hand side, and the first item is amber. So you need to know about that, be aware of it, but there won't be really detailed questions on it. And you can see that the text there tells you exactly what you need to know. You won't be expected to write code sequences, for instance. And the second item on that screen, that's marked green, and this is slide 44. And that means you really need to study this and you really need to master it. We've identified barriers as an important concept, and we think that competent ARM engineers should have a good understanding of that, and you will get detailed questions on this in the exam, so study it carefully. And then if you look down at the bottom of the slide, this is slide 45, the third item, VFP, vector floating point, that's marked red. So when studying for this exam, you can safely ignore that subject, and we can tell you that there won't be any questions on it. So that's the syllabus, and you've checked the knowledge areas, and you've noted the traffic lights. And if you have a good knowledge of the green items and a good awareness of the amber items, well, perhaps now you can put that to the test. Now, I don't mean go straight ahead and take the exam. That would be a risky strategy. Instead, have a look at one of the mock tests that we've put up on the website. And if you look at slide 46 now, here's the page on learning resources for the AAE examination on our website. And you can see that there are three mock test papers. And these are great for testing your knowledge and checking on your study progress. So look at slide 47. You can see there are three of them. You might want to have a go at one of them quite early on. You might want to save the second one for when you've had a chance to do some studying, and you might want to save the third one for a bit of final practice and a final check before you go ahead and take the exam. And you can see there are two documents for each test. The first is the test paper itself, and if you look at that, slide 48, you can see that the front of the paper looks just like one of those exams you've taken at school or at college. It tells you that the test contains 10 questions, says you should allow about 10 minutes, and you should try and do it without reference materials. If you go to the next slide, please, Kurt. And the most important thing, a score of about 7 out of 10. We call that a pass on these tests. Getting 7 or more right means that your level of knowledge and your level of competence is about the same as required for a pass on the real exam. So if you start the clock and turn the paper over and have a go and move to slide 49, just like the real exam, you'll see the questions are all multiple choice. Each one has a single unique answer. And we ask you to select exactly two or three of those. Now, once you've completed that, you'll be wanting to know how well you've done. Well, we've published the answers too, so you can go and download those and check those. And if you look at slide 50, you'll see the answer sheet for each test reproduces the questions, and it indicates which is the correct answer. So you can easily score yourself, and you can get an idea of how your study is going. If you can skip on another slide, please. In this case, answer C is correct. But the answer sheet is a lot more useful than that. And if we can head to slide 52, please, you can see that under each question is an explanation of why that answer is correct. And there's a pointer to the relevant section in the reference documentation. So answer C is correct. you can find the relevant information in the ARM v7 Architecture Reference Manual, section B.1.5.7, and the relevant extract is even quoted underneath. So going through the answers isn't just a case of checking whether you're right or wrong. It helps you to understand why the answer is the correct one, and it helps you to introduce yourself to the reference documentation. So it's most likely you've checked the syllabus, you've perhaps tried the first mock test, and you've discovered you've got some learning to do. So what are the options? Well, if we skip to slide 54, there are quite simply three options. There's self-study, there's face-to-face training, or there's online training. So if we have a very quick look at each one of those and just see what the options are and how they work. So if you could skip to slide 56, please, Kurt. First option, self-study. Always start with the most important document of all, and that's the AAE study guide. And there is an AAME study guide too. And that document is very comprehensive. It goes through every syllabus area, and it lists all of the reference documents. And the second most important document for the AAE exam, if you look for slide 57, please, the most important document, so the Cortex-A Series Programmer Guide, and that's intended as the primary reference for the AAE exam, and it covers pretty much all the subjects that you need to know. And for the AAME exam, we'd recommend Joseph Yu's excellent definitive guides to the ARM Cortex-M processors. And there's also Trevor Martin's designer's guide to the Cortex-M processor family, and you can find links to those on our website. Now, for some, that's going to be the best way. But if you don't have much ARM background, then perhaps some training is the best solution. So if we could skip to slide 59, please. We've worked to set up an ecosystem of training partners, and you can find a list of those on our website. And on slide 59, you can see the relevant page from our website. We have training partners in most regions, and all of them have been carefully selected and trained by ARM to prepare their students to pass the exam. At all of them, you'll be taught by an instructor who has taken and passed the exam, so they do know what they're talking about. And all of them should be able to provide you with a comprehensive training program and a package that includes a voucher covering the exam fee. But if face-to-face training isn't an option for you, we've also worked with a company called Mindshare to make some online training available. And if we can see slide 60, please, you can see an extract from Mindshare's website, which shows the details. You can buy that course direct from Mindshare and view it anywhere, anytime for 90 days. And you get a copy of the slide material to keep as a reference after your access expires. And the cost includes a voucher, as you can see on the slide, that covers the cost of the exam. Once you've settled on your chosen preparation method and you're well on the way with the study, you'll need to think about registering for the exam. So just to take you through that final process of registering and taking the exam, I'm going to hand back to Greg.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. That was great. Very quickly here, just to kind of wrap this up, this part here isn't rocket science either. In terms of, let me go back here to what happens next. There is a website, that an address that you probably will find very useful, worldwideweb.prometric.com/ARM. On here we have the Prometric resource for actually finding the testing center nearest to you. There should be one not too far away. There's over 6,000 of these around the world at which you can sign up and you can actually schedule the exam. Of course, you're going to want to allow yourself a certain amount of time to study before you actually take the plunge and go along and take the exam. You will, of course, if you've taken one of these training courses, either from ARM or from a training partner, you might very well have a voucher that you can redeem to go to offset the cost, either 100% or some percentage of the cost of the voucher, so that you don't actually have to pay for the exam. But nevertheless, these exams are not hugely expensive. And indeed, your biggest investment in becoming accredited is really going to be the time to study rather than the outlay. So what happens next? Let me see if I can push this, if it works. Learn about the program and do some study. We've had some people with ARM And some people actually outside ARM who've taken the test and who've passed it with no other study. But that's not normal. Normally, you need to do some kind of study and preparation for that. And the resources that Chris has talked about will certainly help you toward the path of being very well prepared for the day in which you actually take the exam. You will then, on the very day that you turn up, you will get a score. Again, it's a little bit like the driving test. They will tell you on the day whether you've passed or failed, and hopefully you have passed. And you will get this lovely logo that you can stick on your business card, and indeed companies which have become corporate partners can use this logo as they please. This is your certification to prove that you're actually an accredited engineer. Another little project that we have running in the sidelines is the ability for you to link, say, from your profile on any social media site, link through to an ARM website, which will also certify that you've taken the test. Okay, and this I think is just about my conclusion slide here. It's a little bit of a reprieve of the different URLs. The one which you see most highlighted in front of you is arm.com/AEE. This is a good stopping off point for all information about the program, and from here you can probably also get through to Prometric, which is the site that you'd visit to actually schedule a test at your local test center. If you're interested in becoming a training provider, a university, a participant, or a corporate partner, then you can write to Debbie.Decker, our colleague here in ARM, or indeed any questions at all about the program. There's a universal mailbox within ARM called certification@arm.com to which you can write to find out more. So with that, I think I will hand back to Kurt. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg and Chris. We are now to the Q&A portion, and we will go a little over time since the presentation had a lot of great information, and we want to make sure that we get to your questions. I will summarize a few of the questions that are coming in. Greg, there are a lot of questions asking about what are the costs involved, what kind of budget should they be allocating to get engineers through the training.
The cost of the exam itself is $200, and very often that's discounted, but the base cost in the U.S. is $200. It might be cheaper in places like China, but probably not that very much. And the cost of training is the cost of the learning is kind of dependent on the individual. In some cases, you're already trained. In other cases, it depends on the price that will be given by a training partner. But I can say that, for example, if you look at the Mindshare website, they offer an online training for $800.
Great. In terms of distinguishing, is there any way to distinguish whether you've done extremely well on the exam? Like in the United States, we have the whole A, B, C, D, F kind of grade point and transcript, or is it pass-fail?
At the moment, it's pass-fail. Companies who sign up to the program and who pay for exam analysis can get much more information on that and statistics and details of how the candidate has done in various different subject areas. But at the moment, the standard exam for the individual is pass-fail.
Okay. And do you pay each time you take the exam then, I assume?
Yes, that's an interesting one. Some of the training providers, at their own discretion, provide a subsidized retake facility. But the standard line with ARM at the moment is that if you have to retake, then you pretty much have to repay the fee. But I guess we will be doing promotions from time to time where you can retake it at zero cost. But the standard line at the moment is that if you're going to sit the exam, then unfortunately you have to pay the fee again.
Okay. And how much time should you allocate to study for the exam?
Chris, do you want to take this?
Yes, I can do. That is a real how long is a piece of string question. It depends, honestly, on where you're starting from. Obviously, you want to get to the same place. But it depends how much experience you have and how much knowledge you already have. Typically, we've found that most people who've been around ARM for maybe 4 or 5 years won't need to take any explicit training and can manage with self-study. And typically, if you're looking to between 20 and 30 hours of self-study, something like that, we've spoken to quite a few people who've done the exam, and that seems to be a common theme, about 20 to 30 hours of sort of fairly intensive self-study. And some people will need to take a training course and go and talk to some of our training providers before that in order to sort of get up to speed quickly. But if you allow 20 to 30 hours, then you're doing about right.
Okay. And is there any sort of length of time the accreditation is valid for? Is it valid for certain versions of the processor, or how does that work?
It's valid indefinitely. That's an interesting idea, but the way the scheme is run at the moment, once you're accredited forever on either AE or AEME.
Got it. Another excellent question here. Presently, all semiconductor companies with ARM provides APIs. So as a software developer, do you even need to study for the ARM or any architecture? Is the exam useful if you're a software developer for these architectures? I guess it just shows a little bit more of a breadth and depth of understanding. But if you're a C code writer, maybe not so important.
Yeah, I think it is, if I could take that one. I think it is important, and this was part of the reason for developing the exam, to be honest. It's a little bit like driving a car. If you understand how the pedals work and how that funny sort of round steering thing in front of you works, then you can drive a car and you can drive it perfectly safely. But if you want to go and take part in a Formula One race or a NASCAR race, then you need to know a little bit more about how the car works. You need to know some detail about what's under the bonnet. You need to know about what actually happens when you move that lever from position one to position two and you change gear and so on. And the more you know, the better you can drive the car. And we're certainly convinced, and experience bears out, that the more you know about the processor you're using and how the architecture works, the better is the code you can write. And that is certainly the experience we've had of everyone who's taken the exam so far.
Right, I see. There's some really good technical questions coming in as well at the beginning when you were introducing the ARM. There's a question about multi-core based processor cores. Can you talk a little bit about ARM's strategy there?
Yes, we can, certainly. All of the sort of top of the range processor cores, the Cortex-A processors, the kind that you would find in a tablet or in a mobile phone, all of those are multi-core capable these days. So they have coherent memory systems, they have coherent cache systems and so on, and they have inter-processor communication facilities. So many of our licensees do design multi-core solutions with those, and the underlying hardware and the underlying architecture includes features that specifically provide for that and specifically make it efficient. They are dealt with in some detail in the AAE exam, which focuses on that V7A architecture.
Okay, great. What about frequency of exams? Do you kind of look on the website and they tell you where and when, or how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Finding out the frequency of the exams, because as Greg explained earlier, that we administer the exam through our global exam partner, that's Prometric. So the exam is basically available on demand at any Prometric test center that offers it. They have in excess of 5,000 test centers all over the world. So if you want to find out the nearest one to you, head to Prometric's website, and there's a link in the presentation to that, and just do a search in your neighborhood for the nearest test center. And if you book for our exam, you'll find a selection of available times and days that you can book. And you book a specific time on a specific day, attend the exam center, and the exam is made available to you on demand.
Okay. Is there any sort of restrictions in terms of retaking the test? Can you do it whenever, or is there a minimum amount of time you need to wait or anything like that?
No, there are no restrictions like that. You could pretty much, if you studied very, very hard, you could come back the following week and retake the test. Although we would recommend that a student would need probably a few weeks of study before attempting to come back and sit the same exam again.
I see. Okay, there's a really good question coming in about FAEs and people working with the semiconductor company who licenses the ARM cores. What's the real added value there? I mean, I guess it gives the company a leg up, right, saying they've got competent people in the field helping, you know, with their customers' applications.
Yes, yeah, I think so. You know, if one of these things, if you've been working at a big ARM partner for many, many years, then you already know that you're good, and you may then want to use the certification to round off your resume as a kind of a finishing touch to your resume to show to the world that you're completed in ARM. But on the other hand, in FAEs, the certification has an important role outside the company to prove the expertise and the level really of achievement in ARM to the outside world. So it kind of has a double purpose there.
Right. Is there a discount for getting both certifications?
That's an interesting one. No, not at the moment. No.
Okay.
But I mean, we're talking about $200 for the exam.
Right.
Yeah.
There are some questions about just the ARM processor architecture and microinstructions themselves. Can you just talk a little bit about how ARM differentiates themselves there? It is a RISC machine, but are there special instructions that lend themselves well to power management, for example, or any sort of applications?
The power efficiency of the ARM architecture is not necessarily down to the instruction set, although that is quite a big element in that. The microarchitecture of the cores is extremely power efficient, and the way the instruction set works allows that to be the case. I think power consumption as well is very dependent on the silicon process and the fabrication methodology and the design rules and so on that are used when putting the chip together. But the underlying architecture is fundamentally a power-efficient architecture, yes.
What about practicing for the ARM instruction set? Do you have any recommendations there?
How do you mean practicing? Learning the ARM instruction set?
Are there assembly DIY boards out there they can mess around with to get some...
Absolutely. There are lots and lots of development boards and prototyping boards and sort of DIY hobby boards, if you like. One very good solution is to look for boards manufactured under the Embed brand. That's M-B-E-D. There are a whole range of those, and they cost as low as $9.95 these days. Very, very cheap indeed. They have a Cortex-M microcontroller on them, and they come with free tools because the tools are all in the cloud. And they are a great route just for getting started with ARM. But the quicker you look, go and look at, you know, Premier Farnell, look at any of the big distributors, look at that sell components and sell boards, and you'll find low-cost boards everywhere. And there you can use the free GCC tools, or you can get eval versions of ARM's tools as well in order to practice. So lots and lots of available options there, yes.
Great. What about IDEs or simulators?
Yes, the ARM tools, if you want to look for the microcontroller tools, MDK, for instance, that comes under the Kyle brand, the DS5 tools, which are much sort of higher-end tools that are for the Cortex-A and Cortex-R processors, they come with simulators included in the package. So you don't even have to have a board. You can run code in simulation, if you like, with any of those. And they're available, certainly in eval, they're available free.
Okay, great. Books, printed books?
Books is an interesting one. Yes, we mentioned a few on the way through. And if you go for the AAE web pages, you can see links to a whole set of standard books there. If you hunt elsewhere on the ARM website, under our documentation site, which is called infocenter.arm.com, you can find some links to ARM-related books there as well. There are a lot on the market these days. The ones that we've mentioned in this particular presentation are the ones that we would highlight, so I'd go ahead and pull those. And they are all referenced on the AAE web pages.
Great, fantastic. Unfortunately, we've completed our 5 minutes past the hour. Really appreciate the presenters hanging in there and answering the questions. We had a lot more questions coming in. Thanks to the audience. You did a fantastic job. And be sure that ARM will be going through those questions and getting in touch with you and or you can feel free to get in touch with ARM as well about those excellent questions that we did not get to. I want to thank Greg and Chris for walking through the program. We at Open Systems Media and ARM want to thank you for attending and contributing excellent questions remotely. The eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. I want to remind everyone of the closing survey as well that will be popping up shortly. Note that an audio-only podcast will also be made available, and you can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCast available for download as MP3s. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.